Carlton News Talk 1330 FM 106.3.
Good morning. Welcome to the Community Voice. I'm Steve Braddock, your host. Delighted to have you with us on this beautiful Monday morning. And thank you for tuning in. And we're very grateful for your listening and watching on Facebook Live. And the political season has officially started today with early voting. In the 3rd Congressional District, we've had the candidates on. I think Mr. Singleton's been on once, and the others at least twice. And Mr. Bennett's on 3 times because he started early. But the second appearance, the encore appearance of former State Senator Mike Crane, is up in the batting box right now. You ready to go? Mike's journey into public service was never part of the plan, according to his website, after getting involved in politics for the first time during the Tea Party of 2010. It's a long time ago.
No, it was just yesterday, Steve. What are you talking
and
about?
We got upset about $987 billion being spent. You know, it's just pocket change now.
It is pocket change.
He knew that God was calling him to serve his community through the stewardship of government. Since then, along with 5 years in the Georgia State Senate, he has served over 7 years as chair of the Georgia Republican Party's 3rd District Committee. Mike has been married to Tracy for 36 years. Together, they have raised 2 children, Caitlin and Ethan, in the heart of the 3rd District. Mike's a Georgia Tech graduate. The business owner. Professionally, Mike and Tracy work together as a general contractor and also in the real estate industry. Mike has over 45 years spent as a builder and business owner. Served 5 years in the Georgia State Senate, where he was rated as the most conservative senator in modern Georgia history. He and his wife attend and serve at Ford Church in Sharpsburg and reside full-time in Franklin. Just to a little more detail on his political background, Mike challenged David Scott, the Democratic incumbent congressman from the Georgia 13th in 2010, but lost his race. 2011, State Senator Mitch Seball resigned from the Georgia State Senate. A special election was called, which Crane won. He was reelected in 2012 and in 2014. And then on January 20th, 2016, he announced his candidacy for Congress in Georgia's 3rd Congressional District to replace retiring Lynn Westmoreland. He won the race, but lost the primary runoff election to Drew Ferguson. And then Mr. Ferguson has decided not to run again. So with that, good morning.
Well, good morning. Here we are, right? So the race continues, I suppose.
The race continues. So in news, you always say who, what, when, where, why, and how, and, you know, your job is done. But give us the why first. Why you decide to run again?
Wow. So here we are. The inflation's out of control. Grocery stores, things cost too much. I mean, I do a lot of the shopping in our house, Steve, too, and we just share responsibilities. And when I come out of the grocery store and I've got 3 bags in one hand and I just spent $100 and 17 of it was for dog food treats, I'm in big trouble, right?
Yeah.
I think we all are. And the invasion across the border that's been self-inflicted by the current Biden administration policies. Our country's in a dangerous trajectory. And I'm not going to sit for it, especially with this open seat. There's only 19 of them in the entire nation. And with Ferguson's retirement, I guess we'll call it that, it makes an opportunity for the 3rd District to finally get a voice of their own in Washington instead of one of Washington's voices down here representing us. And so I wanted to make sure the good folks of the 3rd District had someone just like them as an option on the ballot starting today, matter of fact.
You know, there's a problem. You use the term retirement when an elected official retires.
Yes. I didn't know what. What do you say? He's not seeking. He quit. Well, no, he's finishing his term, right? Now, there's a difference because there are quitters. I mean, there's another candidate in this race that actually quit his elected office to run for this seat. And so I'm not a quitter. As a builder, I've got to finish every project I start, right? And the Great American Project needs to be completed, and I think we can do it if we quit sending politicians to Washington that have an agenda or something, some goal to political ladder climbing they want to do.
Along those lines, would you entertain the idea of joining the Freedom Caucus up there?
So that's an invitation-only kind of thing, but absolutely. The Freedom Caucus, to me, is the only group of thinkers up there right now that are trying to change the direction that our nation's headed in. I mean, it's just like that. Remember that when the container ship in the Baltimore Harbor ran into that bridge abutment. I mean, there's questions if that was not sabotage and directly cyber warfare that directed that ship into that piling. But that ship to me represents Biden administration policies. It's overloaded. It's rudderless. It's without power. And it's aiming right at the heart of America. And if we don't change direction, we're going to have the same result. And so I think we can change direction. The Freedom Caucus is trying to initiate that change. Some of the things, Steve, are just simply a matter of changing the rules within the House structure that allow for better debate opportunities, that allow for amendments to bills. They're trying to create a framework where actually common sense and ideas can have their way, make their way to the floor of the House. So, yes, I'd be glad to serve alongside them.
It's really the House has lost its influence and its power over the years.
Well, they've surrendered it.
Yeah.
It's not lost it. I mean, they have it, and it should be reclaimed. And so it's a leadership issue. It's finding the way to bring the common ground together, to get people to work together for a common goal. As a builder, I mean, that's just what you do every day. We, as business owners, you do it. You don't build a radio station network and a media network like you did by arguing with people and telling them what they need to do. You find the way to collaborate, identify what the goal is, and find a way for everybody to do the win-win, where it's beneficial for you, it's beneficial for me, and it's beneficial for the future. I mean, that's politics done well. They've just forgotten to do it because they think it's now some media circus, and it's not.
Our guest this morning is former State Senator Mike Crane. He's running for U.S. Congress, District 3, and we'll be back with more after this.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
The World Language Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined, curriculum-based track to acquire essential knowledge and skills for success in biliteracy fields of study. The successful completion of this journey provides colleges with a method to recognize a rigorous foreign language immersion experience for all students at Oak Mountain Academy. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Well, Welcome back to the Community Voice. Former state senator Mike Crane. Sorry.
They say once a senator, always. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, senators just fade away. Anyway, candidate for U.S. Congress in the Republican primary. Last time you were here, and the generally in presidential years, the economy is the number one issue, but it seems to have been outstripped, at least in part, or at least matched by the issue of immigration. So last time we jumped into that in the first thing. So let's just stay with that. One thing that caught my attention was last year, the Biden administration flew in 300,000 illegal aliens on an asylum program. Yeah. That's, who cares about the border? Just give them a plane ticket.
Right.
And, of course, we've got upwards now of 11 million that we know that have crossed this open border policy. I always try to keep it personal as we can, and I think we're all heartbroken by the murder of Lakin Riley.
Yeah, it's true.
And so
a totally preventable tragedy.
Yeah, so what should Congress do? I always want to bring it back to a House of Representatives. What should they do to address this issue?
Yeah, so Congress, the great strength of that, especially the House of Representatives, is they have control of the budget. No dollars get spent at the federal level without the assent of the House of Representatives. And so to that point, I think the thing that needs to happen, the border has to be closed, and we have to get operational security at the border 100%. And what's interesting, and people don't think about this, but immigration law has not changed between administrations, right? The law regarding immigration in this country is unchanged. But why is it a night and day difference? And it's because the law is so poorly written that the executive branch can change the application of that law and how they interpret that in a very loose manner. And so you go from under Trump, we had pretty secure borders, and we were moving to a more and more secure border. Now it's less and less secure under Biden, and we've got this invasion underway. And so it is an economic issue, it is a security issue, and the future of our nation is at risk. I mean, this one issue, this illegal invasion, has become, I mean, it's everything. And it's probably the most important thing we have to do. We have to close the border. And so from a congressional standpoint, I think the posture should be in the House that until you change your policies, we need to reinstate the Remain in Mexico policy that Trump initiated. We need to make sure that no one can just come here and make a generic asylum claim. They have to make those claims at their country of origin or at the next closest safe country that they can appear in. They don't get to just walk into the United States. And so the House of Representatives should refuse to carry any legislation forward until those things happen. And you have to just force Biden to do it until we elect Donald Trump in November, if we can do that.
But if the border is closed, the idea of deporting all of the illegal aliens is probably not realistic, is it?
No, I think it's very realistic. If they can all come here, we can send them all back. And I think we should send them with an invoice.
We don't know, at least a half a million, they call them gotaways.
The getaways, the gotaways.
Yeah, so that's
and that number is probably very underreported. When I was down at the border a couple months ago.
Yeah, tell us about that. You did actually go down there.
Yeah, well, it's worth seeing. You go to our website and you'll see a video we did called 310 to Yuma. And we were at the end of the border wall in the Yuma sector. And we saw where the illegals cross over. They drop all of their IDs and they present themselves to Border Patrol claiming asylum and just picking a name and an identity that they want to present without any way of us validating who they are. And so then they're forwarded into our country and become part of our census, right? Which is how we determine representation in Congress. That has to stop. We've got to change our Constitution probably, but the law most certainly, so that we quit counting illegal aliens in our census when it becomes a matter of appropriation of dollars. And so there's a lot of challenges here, but we've got to shut the border, and then we begin that. Now, Biden's not going to begin any deportation thing. We've got to elect Trump in November, and then he's already said he will begin the biggest mass deportation in history. Just send them back and let them get in line properly. I'm fine with folks coming here, but we're a law and order country, and we need to do it that
way. When you were down there, did you see evidence? I mean, these people are not just from Central America. They talk like there's 28,000 Chinese.
Oh, it's way more than that on the Chinese. What was interesting, what we found on the ground littered between the Colorado River and the wall itself, we saw debit cards from Russia, debit cards, right? We saw SIM cards from all over the world. I found a passport from Senegal. I mean, you know, Senegal's just right. Oh, wait, it's across the Atlantic Ocean on the western coast of Africa. Africa. How did that person get here?
Let's shift gears. I mentioned that generally in a presidential year, the economy is always number one issue, seemingly. And you mentioned about food prices, and of course, trying to get the true inflation percentage is a little bit difficult sometimes because a lot of times the food and fuel is not included. But
right.
But basically, if you look at inflation rate overall since Biden took office, it's upwards of like 19% or so. And then, of course, food is, can be upwards of 20 to 30%. You had referenced this, but I want to quote it. Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution says, quote, all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives, unquote. This is often called the power of the purse.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the world doesn't the House of Representatives use that method to bring a lot of these issues under control?
I think because past leadership, what we've seen historically from Republicans and Democrats, and what frustrates all of us as Americans, is this insistence on deficit spending, borrowing from the future for our current convenience. I mean, I find that immoral. I mean, who would steal from their kids so they could go on a cruise? I mean, nobody would do that. But we're doing it as a nation, and we've got to break that cycle. We've got to get more, start moving in the direction of a balanced budget. And to do that, we're going to have to shrink the size of the federal government. I mean, including the military. I mean, you're talking 4 million federal employees between the military and the civil forces that support them, and then the workers, the million workers in the federal government.
But there's also about 10 million contract workers. You're talking 12, 13, 14 million people.
They say that we don't have enough labor to do real jobs in America. Well, why don't we just transfer those folks into the private sector where they do something productive for the economy instead of stuff that's so destructive to us business owners? You're like me, Steve. You've probably signed the front of a paycheck a lot more than you've signed the back of one, right? and the government's made it very difficult for us to do that. Not our local governments. It's the federal government that makes that more and more onerous. It's harder to do. And so we've got to get the federal government off our back. And that's what's going to free up us as American citizens, where housing becomes affordable, where groceries are affordable, and where we can save for the future and not depend on the government to provide for that.
Okay. Yeah, with all due, I'm sure they're listening to the Federal Communications Commission. God bless you. Anyway, we're going to take another break. We're going to come back. We're talking to former State Senator Mike Crane.
Future congressman
from the 3rd District of the great state of Georgia, when we'll return.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
The Entrepreneur Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined, curriculum-based track to acquire essential knowledge and skills for success in business and leadership. Critical areas include identifying entrepreneurial characteristics, selecting a value position, and business model development. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Community Voice. Thank you for listening. And we're on Facebook Live, and I need to pull that up, and I forgot to do it. Before we move on, I do want to, you mentioned there's really, as serious as open borders are and potential terrorist attacks, you know, this never gets the exposure it deserves. But we're, what is it, $34 trillion in debt now?
Right.
We've got a budget of, what, $7 trillion and a deficit of, like, $2 trillion.
Yeah,
like
in round said, numbers, all that's
you
correct.
You know, I mean, Tea Partiers in 2010 ought to be awful foolish. I mean, you know, Obama didn't even get that extra oomph with up to a trillion. He got up to 987.
Yeah, he was, what was the numbers then? About $10 trillion was the deficit at that time?
Yeah. It was ridiculous. And back in the Clinton and Newt Gingrich era, we had a balanced budget for one time. The Georgia State Senate and Georgia legislature always balances this budget.
To some degree, we could talk about that more, but they always have the capacity to borrow.
Yeah.
They never talk about that. And they borrow a lot every year when they do
and
that.
And so we may not see that, but in the federal government, it's totally out of control.
It is.
So, I mean, in a way, you talk about work ethic and going to the grocery store and you can't afford anything. I mean, I have that problem. Everything's so stinking expensive. And whatever reasons you might contend have led to all of this, I don't think you can not talk about fiat currency and ballooning national debt and not be on target with a lot of the economic problems and challenges we face.
Yeah, I think what the sense I get, Steve, as I go all around the district, and know the 3rd District's a large area, and it encompasses 15 counties, and so there's a lot of folks we talk to, but everybody's talking about that. I mean, as a contractor and as a real estate agent, our clients can't afford the median priced home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, interest rates, when I say are only at 7%, you and I have experienced way north of that, but housing prices were more affordable. You know, a 7% loan at an affordable priced house is not the most terrible thing in the world, but because housing prices are so inflated because of the incredible inflationary pressures that federal policies have put on us. All of this is a creation of the federal government and the Federal
and
Reserve.
Put on state governments.
Yeah, and so then we have to deal with it. But there is hope. I mean, honestly, there really is. When I came into the Georgia Senate, was during what they called the Great Recession. So the Great Recession started in 2008. The economy tanked extremely, especially in my industries, right? Real estate and construction.
Right.
It doesn't get any harder than that. And so what happened to state revenues during that time? Over a few years, they dropped over 20%, 20% reduction in state revenues. And yet, to your point earlier, we have to operate outside of borrowing within our you can only borrow for infrastructure type projects. So operationally, we don't borrow anything at the state level. But with a 20% reduction in revenues, we were still able to balance that budget and operate. And I can guarantee you, nobody missed anything. Nobody didn't say, oh, the state didn't do this for me. We made it through. And I was a budget chairman in the Senate during that time, and we were able to find ways to make the budget work. We can reduce the scope and scale of the federal government 20% easily in the next 4 years if we set our mind to it. And that's the way I'm going to go to work in Washington. We are going to reduce the size and scope of the federal government. We're going to reduce the budget. We're going to reduce the deficit. And we're going to start getting the debt clock running in the different directions.
You know, sometimes I just want to scream that if we in our business or in our personal lives get over budget, we simply stop paying something.
Something. Usually ourselves
first, yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. But you stop paying something. You stop contracting for this, that, and the other. So I don't understand why the House of Representatives can't stop paying for all this stuff.
Because they've been conditioned. It kind of broke. The whole system broke loose back in 2007, 2008. You saw, I think, one of the precursors was Hurricane Katrina, and people don't think back that far. Mm-hmm. But up to that time, most disasters were localized and were handled locally. The federal government stepped in a very big way and poured money into that. And some of that was rightfully so, because a lot of the problems were created by the federal government's mismanagement of river flows on the Mississippi. And so that's a whole nother question. But what that does point at, Steve, is the federal government doesn't do anything well. And like Reagan said, when the government says, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, you should be very careful and grab your wallet before they let them proceed.
I love the way I always say it. He said government.
Government.
Government. Anyway, let's shift back. It's been a busy weekend. I think you did the Carroll County Republican Party Forum, which is on our Facebook page.
That was Friday.
Mm-hmm. And then Saturday you did the press club. Was it Saturday?
No, it was Sunday after church. I mean, who schedules all this stuff on Sunday? I had to leave church service early to get to that.
I worked with a congressional candidate years ago, and he wouldn't do anything on Sundays.
Good for him.
Well, he lost. But anyway, and then I think we had Georgia. What was the other one? Georgia GPB had a thing.
Those were combined. The GPB was the Atlanta Press Club. Okay. Yeah, they pull that together. That
anyway, from what I understand, I didn't see it. All the Republican candidates, when asked whether or not they believe the 2020 presidential race was stolen in Georgia, everybody raised their hand and said that they thought it was. Now, the election integrity issue, because I know that's on your website, is an important issue for you. So give me a little elaboration on your perspective on all this.
Well, I think, here we are. Today's early voting starts today.
Correct.
There's nothing more important than people feeling like the election will be legitimate, right? That they have confidence that when they go cast a vote, it's going to be counted and that illegal votes will not be counted that offset their own, when they weigh into that race. And so what we've not done a really good job of in Georgia, no matter what anybody tells you, is enhance people's confidence level in our elections. Now, they've made some improvements since 2020. Raffensperger hurt our state a great deal when he sent out all those absentee ballot requests to every registered voter on a very broken list of registered voters. And then they created the drop boxes, and he did not stand against that. All of those were weaknesses in a system and provided a lot of opportunities for the Democrats to overpower the system and create what I think is a false outcome in 2020. The problem is President Trump rightfully challenged the outcome of that election, and he never got his day in court for that. Now he's wasting his time in courts all over this country on frivolous charges. The people who brought those charges, I think, should bear the full weight and force of the law and be charged for wrongful prosecution. But that's a whole nother topic, you know.
In Georgia, though, Fulton County was a county of issue and still is. But as far as the 3rd Congressional District, I think everything's...
Other than Spalding County, they had a big hiccup in Spalding County, but they've got that corrected now. And to your point, Fulton County's the issue, right? But we don't get to control that. They elect their own representatives. They put together their own form of government. We just have to win so big. I like how Trump says it, win too big to rig. Mm-hmm. So if we can get our voter percentages here in the 3rd District up strong enough and high enough in November, that will overwhelm any amount of cheating they can do in Fulton County.
But the thing about this is a 2020 race, that was during COVID. Mm-hmm. And mail-in ballots across the nation, they were up to like 43%.
It was a staggering number.
Yeah, and normally it's down to 23 or something like that.
Right.
So it was an unusual time for all of us.
Well, I mean, back to your initial point, people have to have confidence in the elections. I know here in the 3rd District, people should have confidence because we've got great folks running all our county elections here. And my admonition to them is vote early. Let's do what the Democrats do. They call it banking the vote. Today's early voting. Go vote today. Pretend today is election day. And you do a lot of things. You save a candidate like me a whole lot of money chasing you down and trying to get you to the polls. Plus, you eliminate the power of negative advertising. And we're all sick to death of negative advertising politically.
You have experience with that.
Yeah, I've been on the back end of that. I don't do it. I don't initiate it. It's not how I'm wired. Yeah. The one thing that you can tell whenever that starts is that the bad guys aren't in the lead. They know it, and they're desperate, and that's how they act.
That's interesting. I want to, there's so much that goes on these days that kind of, because I'm old enough now, that reminds me of the Carter Reagan era. And there are a lot of similarities. Of course, there's some differences, but there's still a lot of similarities. And after the Carter administration, we had 8 years of Ronald Reagan. There was not as much accomplished there as maybe some would like to remember, but it was still a positive time. So I wanted to kind of leave on a positive note. I mean, are we done as a republic?
Oh, no. I think for those of us, you and I, Steve, that lived those years, that remember it, Tracy and I were just starting our young life here in the 3rd District. We're starting to build our life, our family, right here in the 3rd District. And things were desperate. I mean, I was like thrilled to get a 10% mortgage on my first house, right? Of course, I built that house, so my costs were low type of thing. But things were desperate. The Iranians held hostages in the Middle East. Communism was on the rise around the world. The Iron Curtain was a very real threat. Social unrest was out of control. And inflation, it was hard to just, we were just energy strapped. We were tied to the Middle East so well. And then all of a sudden, one election changed all that. Now, Reagan wasn't perfect, but he didn't just sort of change it. The trajectory from, you remember Carter when he just apologized and just said we were
the malaise.
A malaise, yeah, right? Yeah. That's not it. Americans are always full of hope.
He didn't use that word, but it was attributed to that speech.
Yeah, but that was speech. But that was what he telegraphed.
Sure.
Right? And so what you and I, what we're telegraphing and what the American people do, there's hope. One election makes a difference, and this one is just one of those kind of elections. And that's why I say vote Mike Crane today.
And the website for Mike Crane today is?
CraneForCongress.com. Go there.
Well, thank you for coming in. Thank you for the encore presentation. And the early voting starts today. The show is on our Facebook page, as is the forum from last Friday. And we thank you for listening. And we thank Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy for their sponsorship. Go out and make it a great day. You're in tune to WLBB Carrollton.